Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, starting another, what feels like it's just going to be a great week with another couple of great shows for you. Both hours, we have Trent Horn, apologist extraordinaire, speaker extraordinaire, debater extraordinaire, book writer extraordinaire. You could pretty much put extraordinaire behind virtually any media word, and that would be Trent Horn. He's the author of many books, including the wildly popular Why We're Catholic, which is now approaching multiple hundreds of thousands in print. Hi, Trent.
Hello, Cy. I guess to save word economy, you could just say the extraordinary Trent Horn. Though in our previous shows,
point.
I would still enjoy the magnificent. But
yeah, I'm sorry, I forgot that I was supposed to be calling you the magnificent Trent Horn.
That's
and
okay.
I do still have the objection that it does make you sound like a magician. But
there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with being a magician.
I just make the objections to the faith disappear.
Oh, nicely done, Trent Horn.
Through a trap
Nicely
door.
Nicely done.
At the bottom of the stage.
Our topic with Trent both hours today is which Catholic morality do you reject? Why do you reject Catholic morality? But it could be any aspect of Catholic
morality. Right. I think sometimes we like to pose the question, which Catholic moral teaching do you reject? Because some people say, it's not all of it. It's not all Catholic morality. But it's this teaching on Catholic morality or moral principles that is stuck in my craw, I guess. That's one way to put it.
Stuck in my craw. Okay, so if you have a Catholic moral teaching that you reject, or if you reject the whole thing, the whole enchilada of Catholic moral teaching, you are welcome to call.
I would be impressed to find someone who
rejects 7884.
I am so sorry, Cy. Is Catholic morality obliges me not to interrupt you when you do something important? So perhaps you should give that number out to people one more time.
888-318-7884 to talk with Trent Horn about Catholic morality. But you were going to say you would be shocked if someone
So if I asked them, do you think murder is wrong? Do you think slavery is wrong? Rape is wrong? They say, I think those things are all right. Why?
That would be shocking.
Because Catholic morality condemns
it. I reject
every single element of Catholic morality.
Yeah.
Now, there are some people who don't believe morality is even real at all. They're moral skeptics or they're moral anti-realists who will say, well, morality are just conventions that we come up with. They're not real existing things out there that bind us. So in that sense, now many of those people may still have personal or other philosophical objections to murder, to rape, to genocide, to all kinds of things. But if I found someone who just said, oh, yeah, I believe in the exact opposite of Catholic moral teaching in every respect, well, I'd be fascinated by what, you know. And I'd also be fascinated how they got a computer and a telephone in their prison cell, wherever they're at. So.
I know, right? But the truth is, many people will say, why do you Catholics impose your morals on when it's X, Y, or Z? But nobody ever says, why are you Catholics always imposing your morals on everyone when it comes to murder? You guys are so negative about murder.
Is that what they say? You guys just hate murder. I don't get what's wrong
I
with
guess
it. You need
to
add more vocal fry.
I did a little valley girl in there.
But you need the vocal fry.
Why? But it's true. Most of Catholic morality would be identifiable to modern people as at least consonant with everything they learned from modern morality because they got it from medieval Catholics.
Well, I would say they got it first and foremost from God, though medieval Catholics like St. Thomas Aquinas did articulate it well in natural law and understanding Christian anthropology. But St. Thomas himself is even ahead of his time with his work on the virtues. There were people even shortly after him who didn't consider it proper to teach in schools because it kind of diverged from standard medieval thought, his teaching on the virtues and the passions.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But then later, of course, came to be accepted.
Right.
But I would say that most people, the reason we all tend to agree on morality is because I believe moral facts are real. Morality is a real objective thing.
Right.
And God placed within each of us the ability to know the moral law, at least at a very rudimentary level. Romans chapter 2, St. Paul mentions this, Romans 2:14 through 16, really, talking about how the Gentiles who don't have the Mosaic law Well, they still know what the law requires because God wrote it on their hearts. He wrote a law on their hearts in the form of a conscience, and we all have right. that. Now, some people, it may be deformed, it may be malformed, you may be born with a genetic predisposition, unable to detect morality, but that does not show moral truths do not exist any more than the fact that there are people who are born with varying degrees of blindness do not refute the objective nature of color
yeah.
or of different kinds of visual realities beyond us.
Again, 888-318-7884, the number. Trent Horn is our guest. And why do you reject Catholic morality? If there's some aspect of Catholic morality that you reject, or if you just you haven't heard anything particularly good about Catholic morality and you want to let us know that, you
That's
are
fine.
To
if you if you think the whole thing's bunk,
yeah.
call right in. I mean, there's people who say you don't have a leg to stand on talking about morality with the whole priest scandal. I hear that all the time. If that's how you feel, let's chat about it. Let's talk about it.
Why would the priest scandal have anything to do with you, Trent Horn, or you, just generally Catholics?
Well, what they'll say is Catholic morality, in quotation marks, tarnished beyond repair by what priests and others within the church have done in light of recent instances of sexual abuse or covering up of sexual abuse.
I see. Okay.
Which is it's a very common attitude that I've heard, and I'm happy to engage that.
Let's go to Michael in St. Louis, Missouri, listening on 1460 AM Covenant Radio. Michael, you are on first this week. Why do you reject Catholic morality?
Okay, this is a tough one. I don't fully reject it myself, but I just have a question on how to defend
sure.
a certain teaching. So you guys have surely addressed this, but I teach high school, and one of the questions that comes up in this same-sex marriage debate versus heterosexual marriage is just the traditional understanding of marriage is how to justify that it's okay for maybe a couple in their 80s to get married when mm-hmm. there's no possibility of conceiving a child versus
sure.
a same-sex couple that we often say, well, it's not ethical that they should be married because it's the type of union that doesn't produce a child by any, and it can't produce a child in that way. So just how would you explain
right.
the difference between those from, I know that's more of a practical standpoint that our society is very invested in now. Well, practically
sure.
this is
yeah.
the case. And so that's where I'm just kind of confused how you would explain the difference between those two unions,
mm-hmm.
although because both of them cannot conceive a child.
Sure. And so the objection goes something like this, that if you say that a same-sex couple cannot get married because they, quote, cannot have children, then wouldn't it follow then other people, like an elderly couple past menopause who are no longer fertile, why are they allowed to get married even though they can't have children either? And I think this objection has force only against a very weak argument for the Catholic position. Our position is not that the only people who are allowed to get married are those who, quote, can have children. That's not our position at all. It's up to God whether you can have a child or not. Children are a blessing from God, and sometimes even people who appear to be fertile are not. So it's not a prerequisite to get married that you can have children. The prerequisite is you can engage in the marital act, or to put it bluntly, you can have sex. You have to be able to have sex in order to get married. That's an essential requirement. In fact, even in civil law, there are usually provisions to annul a civil marriage in the case of impotence if the marriage is simply never consummated at all. So the difference here is that an elderly couple that they're engaging in the marital act. They're having sex. They're engaging in the marital act as is traditionally defined, it just doesn't end in resulting in a child. But a same-sex couple is not engaged in the marital act. And strictly speaking, they're not even having sex at all. It's unfortunate people have this kind of equivocation model role. I'm going to try not to be graphic or anything like that, but they are engaging in sexual behavior, but the sexual act itself only makes sense in the context of men and women and their reproductive organs aligning towards a life-giving end. Even if that end isn't always achieved, they're still engaged in that act. So to say that the same kind of thing because they can't reach the same end, that's like saying a three-year-old, it's like saying a two-year-old and a house cat are basically the same kind of thing because both of them can't read. Well, no, one of them has a nature to read that hasn't developed yet, and maybe you might have a 20-year-old that has illiteracy. You have someone who should be able to read who has a defect. So an elderly couple that can't conceive a child, there is a defect there preventing the marital act from reaching its proper end. With a same-sex couple, they're not infertile. In many cases, one or both people is fertile. They're just not engaged in the act ordered towards children. So it's no reason why they can't have children. They're not doing the thing that leads to children. So it has no relevance within the Marriage Act itself. A great analogy comes from the book What is Marriage? By Robert George, Sharif Gurgis, and Ryan Anderson, that an infertile married couple, man and woman, are sort of like a baseball team that has a shutout season. Even if they never win a single game, they're still a baseball team because they're ordered towards the end of winning games. But nine guys on a Saturday afternoon throwing the ball around, they're engaged in goods related to baseball. They're not a baseball team, though. They're not ordered towards that end. And that's a similar analogy you can make to a same-sex couple engaged in sexual behavior and an elderly, infertile, married couple, even if they don't, even the marital act doesn't end in children. So is that a helpful illustration for you?
Yeah, very much. Thank you very much, Trent.
Sure, no problem.
Hey, thanks very much for starting us off this week, Michael. We appreciate it. It is Catholic Answers Live you are listening to. The number is 888-318-7884. And Trent Horn is our guest both hours today. And the question for you is, why do you reject Catholic morality? If you'd like to explain to us why you reject any aspect of Catholic morality, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Why We're Catholic, as I was mentioning, has now sold. It's on the glide path towards 200,000 copies. It's been the number one bestseller in its category on Amazon for a long time. It's been years, really.
Since it debuted in 2017, it's still retained the number one position on the category is Christian ecumenism, which was really the reason I wrote the book, was to have something. When you think of ecumenism or ecumenical, sometimes the word gets a bad rap. You think like, oh, we're just going to sit around and sing Kumbaya and not talk about the tough stuff. No, ecumenical means to bring together those who disagree, to find common ground and move forward. And that's what I try very hard to do in Why We're Catholic.
Lots of people get it for Easter and give it to others at Easter. If you want to do that right now, if you purchase five or more copies of Why We're Catholic, the price is just $10 a copy at shop.catholic.com. Why We're Catholic is now available also. I am shocked. I'm reading this and realizing this may be news. No, I think we talked about this before. It's an audiobook. You can get the audio format.
Yes, you can now. It's available exclusively on Audible. So this is really our first audiobook at Catholic Answers. People have been asking us for a long time, hey, do you have an audiobook? Do you have this in audiobook? And we hadn't done it. And this was our first test case. Because I know many people, my wife is this way, she probably processes more books through audiobooks than by reading, because she's got, you know, two little wonderful bundles of joy at home who, many people have children at home or have other obligations like work, things like that.
Commuting.
You can't just sit down with a book pleasantly on your veranda or something like that, which would be pleasant for sure. But you could still hear a book. And so that's why we have it available. Why We're Catholic is our first audiobook available on Audible. And I'm actually narrating the book. So you actually get my narration and you can get my voice stuck in your head even more.
Even if you don't have a veranda, you can now get the appropriate copy of Why We're Catholic. I don't have a veranda.
Neither do I.
I feel terrible about that.
I'm not even entirely sure the difference between a veranda and like a deck. I'm worried that I'll commit some kind of faux pas.
One is in Italian.
Oh, of course.
Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
EWTN, teaching the truth.
You have just a beautiful compassion and an affirmation of every caller. You zone right in to each person's need, and then you ask all of us to pray for that person, and I do. I just think you really, really have a great ministry. You just really are tonic and concentrated multiple vitamins for all of us spiritually.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, joined in studio by the inimitable Trent Horn, also called Trent Horn the Magnificent, when he is appearing in Las Vegas.
You can catch me 7 and 10 o'clock.
7 and 10.
Only have Monday and Tuesdays Monday nights are my blackout nights, but otherwise, ready to
my
go.
My blackout night.
Well, yeah, you got to have one night off if you're in Vegas.
Oh, all right. So. I thought, you got to be careful with the use of the word blackout. All right.
I guess in Vegas, I understand your concern.
Yes. They do not tell you the truth about what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas thing. That's not true. That is not true at all. I just wanted you to know that in case you go there.
That is good to know. So
they have really good Catholic parishes there. Didn't you go to one to talk? One
I time have. I've been to Las Vegas several times to speak to the Catholic parishes there. And so Our Lady of the Perpetual Luck. So no,
you did not go to Our Lady of Perpetual Luck. 888-318-7884, the number. Trent Horn, the guest, and the topic. Why do you reject Catholic morality? What is it in Catholic morality that bugs you and you want to get off your chest? Well, Trent Horn is the perfect guy to do that with. He will be happy to have a conversation with you about it. We're not hiding the fact that we're Catholic, but we'd like to know if you've rejected some part of it. Why has that come about? Mark in Colorado is next, listening on 970 AM. Mark, why do you reject Catholic morality?
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got an issue with divorce, specifically annulments, and it's a rather specific situation. It's my situation, so
okay.
I'll just throw it out there and tell you what, and that's actually my issue. I got married in the early 90s. I was baptized as an infant Catholic, grew up Catholic.
Sure.
We got married, and I married a baptized Christian. She was not Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Got married in a Catholic church. All that. And then about 12, 13 years later, she filed for divorce and we got divorced. And I didn't want to get divorced. I wanted to stay in the marriage. I mean, we had some problems. We had a lot of issues.
Sure.
But at the time, I did not want to get divorced. And the way the system is set up, it takes two people to get married, but it only takes one, at least in the United States or in Colorado, it only takes one to end a marriage. And the other person can want to stay in that marriage, and it ends. So,
well, Mark, are you talking about the process of civil divorce or the process of having a marriage annulled? Because you're correct, in most states, the civil divorce is no fault. You're right. It's an interesting irony.
Yeah.
Civilly, legally, takes two to get. You can't marry someone without their consent, but you can break the marriage contract without their consent. Yeah, that's definitely a fault. That's definitely part of no fault divorce. No doubt there.
And then, okay, so then after the civil divorce, then it's, you know, and I waited. I waited, 6-7 years before I even went down the annulment road.
Okay.
And I have an issue of a person, and I know it would be hard to keep everything straight, but a person that didn't want to get divorced, that got divorced against his will.
Right.
Then has to go through all the whole process. And it is a process of annulment.
Right.
I have an issue with it. And I've gotten over it. You know, it took a long time. I got through it. And that is a very charged time in a person's life. I get that.
Right.
But,
well, Mark, was your marriage, did it end up being annulled?
Yes.
Okay.
It did.
This reminds me, I think it's very appropriate you called, the co-author of my book, Layla Miller, is a fearless defender of the church's teaching on divorce. She actually wrote a very powerful essay that she published online not too long ago. If you stay on the line, I'll get your email. I'd love to send it to you. I'd love for anybody to read it, really. It's a really powerful essay talking about how many people within the church have failed people who have been deserted by their spouses. We tell them, "Oh, you got to get over it. Oh, it's time to move on." Or, "Oh, it's for the best." And we don't take the time to acknowledge the grave injustice that was committed against them. And that they're essentially a victim of a very serious sin. Someone has sinned against them, betrayed them. And we've been brainwashed by a culture that's so pro-divorce. We always have to side with the person who seeks divorce because what matters most is everyone wants to be happy. And so, Mark, I certainly apologize if there were people, especially those within the church, that were not as understanding of the wrong that you've suffered, quite frankly. However, when it comes to annulments, there's a great book on the subject by Edward Peters about annulments. And in that book, Peters talks about how the annulment process, it's not like divorce court. Because we think like in divorce court, here are the plaintiffs and we're going to argue about who gets what. It's very adversarial. The annulment process within a tribunal, though, is supposed to be collaborative. It's not you versus me, who's going to get the most stuff at the end of this. The way the church approaches the question of annulment is we want both parties involved so we can get to the truth. Was this a valid marriage, yes or no? And so it's important for both people to be involved because if one spouse is not involved, we might miss a key element that shows, yes, this was a valid marriage or no, it's not. So I think that you might be feeling like, why am I being dragged into this? Well, the reason is the church cares so much about marriage. We want to get all the facts on the table to figure out, are we dealing with a valid marriage that's broken or an invalid marriage that's dissolved because of its invalid nature? So it's more about trying to get at the truth and trying to pit one side against each other. Do you see what I'm saying here?
I do, and I can appreciate that. I just, maybe it's just me. Maybe it's because that is divorce is a very tough time, and
yeah,
the annulment process isn't as tough, but it drags up. It was a long time. It was like,
well, it's hard years. Because, yeah, the annulments, like when we talk about civil divorce, usually it's about how the marriage ended. And that's the question at hand.
Yeah.
Annulments are not about how it ended. It's about how it began. So, you got to go to witness statements. You go back, 10, 20, 30 years when you first got married. I understand it's tough to go through all that. And I hope our listeners will pray. To relive it. Yeah. And I hope our listeners will say a prayer for you. That now you as a you've been affected as being a spouse who's been deserted and all of this that's come about. But I think and that's why I also hate the advice like, oh, at least you know what went through. Now you can start. You can move on. It's like, the wounds in the heart, they're always going to be there. So I think what you're going to have to do is seek out a spiritual director. I always hate that when people think like, oh, the problem, if you're hurting from divorce, just get remarried. No, the problem is not, it's not find another person. It's, I want to find God. I want him to make me whole, to find my place in him. And then if God leads me to it, if I've healed enough from these wounds, and they're always going to be there, it's going to be a scar at least. But if I've healed enough from that, maybe God will lead me towards marriage again. But I find my ultimate happiness in him. So, I hope that's helpful for you. We've got maybe 1 or 2 minutes left. Do you have any other thoughts? Or
I would just say, if hindsight was foresight, we'd all see 2020. And so I would say this, if you're going to get married, make sure you're aligned, first of all, spiritually, and if that means Catholic to Catholic, whatever that means, that's what it means to me. But you better be aligned spiritually. You better be aligned financially, and I think you better be aligned politically. And
well, you should share. It's important to share as many core values as you can. And that's why marriage, it's a discernment process. It's not when you decide to get married, your time shouldn't be consumed with planning a big party in a fancy dress. So thank you for calling. Just stay on the line.
Yeah.
I want to still email you that article, and I might post an article on my social media as well by Layla. It's a wonderful, wonderful piece. So I'll send that to you. It's so funny. We spend 4 or 5 years preparing someone for the priesthood to make sure they're fit. Many candidates are screened out.
Right.
From the process. And with marriage, I worked in an office of marriage before. And when we would tell people, well, if there's a 9-month waiting period till you can get married, people would become apoplectic.
Yeah.
They would engage in histrionics. They would be really, really mad saying, well, hey, wait a minute, you're about to enter in to a lifelong vow to one another that can only be dissolved by death.
Right.
So you want to take your time to think this through and make sure you are prepared for the vows that you're undertaking. It is just very sad what no-fault divorce has done. When people say, you know, 30 years ago, they said, oh, if you have no-fault divorce, it'll make marriages happier and healthier. No, it just cheapens what marriage is. Then it just becomes a fancy certificate from City Hall that doesn't mean very much, except it does mean a lot to people and especially to children. That's why I would recommend Made This Way by myself and Layla Miller on divorce, and Layla's wonderful book, Primal Loss, as well.
Trent Horn is our guest this hour. Our number, 888-318-7884. Why do you reject Catholic morality? Is there some part of it you'd like to explain to us why you've let go of it, or maybe never bought into it? 888-318-7884.
Catholic Answers Live with Trent Horn is coming right back.
Jesus asked his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" Turns out that today, as back then, this question has a lot of different answers. So many groups want to appropriate Jesus, tweaking his identity until he looks and sounds just like one of them. But then you no longer have the Lord, says apologist Trent Horn. You have an imposter. In his new groundbreaking book, Counterfeit Christ, Trent exposes 18 phony versions of Jesus that we encounter today, helping you to recognize the fakes when you see them, explain why they're phony, and make a case for the full truth and beauty of who Jesus is, the Christ, the Son of the living God. Order your copy of Counterfeit Christ today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Love and beauty. As a little girl, Dawn Eden Goldstein knew that she wanted those things, that in them somehow she would find God. Over the years as a rock journalist, she moved among some of popular music's best-known artists, straining to capture that transcendent love and beauty in every note and lyric. In Sunday Will Never Be the Same, Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in beautifully wrought detail, mixing powerful accounts of trauma, healing, and epiphany with funny anecdotes from inside the music scene. It is the rare conversion story that delights as it inspires, amuses as it edifies, and ultimately lays before the reader a lived testimony to the transforming grace of Christ. Order your copy of Sunday Will Never Be the Same by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
For your child's soul on college campuses. We're discussing the environment your children are exposed to on tomorrow's Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. Now let's get back to more of Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest today, and we're taking we're asking you a question and taking your answers on it. The question is, why do you reject Catholic morality? Is there something about Catholic morality that you don't think comports with what's actually good and what's actually evil in this world? Is there something that bothers you about what the church teaches is right and is wrong, and about how to live what's right and avoid what's wrong? Or maybe do you have a more general objection to the idea of morality itself? Why do you reject Catholic morality? You are welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Lots of comments when we do this kind of show include you mentioned the one where, well, you Catholics should just be quiet because you have that sex abuse scandal, which actually, I mean, I guess when you phrase it that way, there's times when we should just be quiet. I mean, that's perfectly okay too. But in a world where there's rampant injustice, I guess the way that I want to phrase this is I feel that sometimes people will, the church will try to have a holistic view of justice. It belongs to everyone. And then people will say, well, that's not right because the most obvious example, of course, is the abortion one, where the church is looking for justice for both the mother and the child.
Right.
But you Catholics are butting your nose in to the mother's business. But justice is for everybody, or there's no justice, or we can't just pick and choose who we stand up for.
Right. No, we have to be consistent in our application of our moral principles, and we have to be consistent even if we ourselves struggle with adhering to those moral principles. A hypocrite is not someone who says one thing and does another.
Yeah.
That's just being human. I mean, how many people, you know, you say, I'm going to go to the gym every week in January, and right about now, if you made it this far, congrats.
Yeah, you're my hero.
But a lot of people, a month or two ago, it's, I'm not going anymore. It's, you're not a hypocrite. You just failed to live up to your standard. But if you actually think that, exercise, you know, if you don't believe in exercise and you think it doesn't help people, but you promote it because you wrote a really famous exercise book and you want to make money, that's a hypocrite. The word hypocrite comes from the Greek word upokrites, means one who wears a mask. So the beneath upokrites, under the mask, a hypocrite is someone who says one thing, but they really mean another.
Yeah.
And so the church, we espouse Catholic morality. Are we all going to live up to it? No. The Bible says the righteous man stumbles seven times a day. Are some of us going to fall in spectacularly bad ways? Well, if you look in the history of God's people, that's a recurring theme. You know, look at Gideon, look at David, even look at Peter. Look at all the people God is, you know, Moses. When God chooses people, sometimes they follow God's will. Other times they face plant. The question is, are we going to get back up again, and are we going to move forward? The church is dealing with a crisis of trust and a crisis of behavior among clergy. And the question is, well, what are we going to do about it? Are you going to run away? Say, oh, I don't need this. Anywhere you go, you're going to find sin, and you'll probably find sexual sin and sexual abuse.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we're seeing
more and more of that coming out.
Yeah, and that is not a way to say, oh, it's not a big deal. It is a big deal. But the question, it's not, well, if we just get rid of the Catholic stuff, we won't have this problem. You'll have this problem everywhere. The question is, how do we address it? And how do we address it with the love, the justice, and the mercy of Christ?
Again, 888-318-7884. The number, 888-318-7884. There is also the impressionist, or I think of it as the impressionist reason for rejecting Catholic morality. And that is, you guys always seem to be on the side of oppressing people. And we're all about more and more people being more and more free to be themselves. And I do think this impression comes a lot from the sexual revolution, because the Catholic Church is probably the number one opponent of the sexual revolution.
You mean the oppressionist view?
I mean, the impression is that is, it's not really an argument. It just seems like you guys are always on the wrong side. Do you see that they have an impression? So they go.
Oh, because when you say impressionist, it makes me think of the 19th century Monet and others like that. They have this, it's not an argument. They have this feeling you guys are always
on your team almost.
You're always on the wrong side
of history.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Well, you're on the wrong side of history. I don't care. I just want to be right. I don't want to be on the wrong side of truth.
Yeah.
So, what does that mean anyways? Who's on the right side? We experience as humanity moral progress, better coming to better understanding of applying morality. And in many cases where we have deviated from morality throughout human history, it's precisely where we have deviated from the revelation God has given us in natural law or in divine revelation of understanding how we ought to treat one another. You talked about abortion before. 2,000 years ago, people killed babies by just, they were born, and you just put them out in the woods. You know, they just put them out in the woods, and Christians were the ones who would go and rescue them and take care of these abandoned infants, even if it was technically illegal to do that. Well, you guys are on the wrong side of history. You know, we've always done this in ancient Rome, and we're always going to keep doing it.
Right.
Now, ancient Rome's gone, not here anymore. Catholic Church is still here. The empires rise and fall, and the church has been here for 2,000 years through all of them. And I think people, even when, there has been horrifying. Some people think with the sexual revolution, oh, we're seeing the worst sexual morality we've ever seen, and but yes. this is the way the world's going. It's like, how's the church going to stand up to it? The church has stood up to sexual immorality before. It's stood up to there are ancient writers who used to talk about how people in the classical world were more dignified because they didn't have relations outdoors in public. It was just not a big deal at all, or just rampant pederasty and trafficking in children. Whereas now, at least it happens. We recognize it's illegal. We devote massive resources to stopping it.
Yeah.
You know, I was, my goodness, I was flying to Massachusetts to give a great talk there. And they get the live TV on Southwest Airlines. And so I like that because there's usually a Law and Order marathon going on the whole day. So it's Law and Order.
Find yourself your Law and Order marathon.
I get my Law and Order SVU for 8 hours straight. And, people are, even though there's grave depravity, at least we live in a world that's committed to recognize that. There was a time in the past it's like, the strong exist to oppress the weak. That's why the weak are here.
Yeah.
But the church has always stood against those kinds of things. And so I think that I would rather be on the right side of truth because truth wins out. Even if you buy into the lies of the sexual revolution, people are starting to see now that it's empty.
In
some ways, yeah. It's empty. It's not fulfilling.
No, but I mean in some ways they're seeing it. In some ways they're not. Like when I go out and talk to young people, and I'm sure that you have the same thing, it really is a crisis among some young people, this change in the law regarding marriage for homosexual people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Like they are truly at a crisis point, lots and lots of young people, because they just see the church being so unfair about that. That'll be the word they use. Why shouldn't this person get to marry if
And then here's the thing. They're absolutely right. They're absolutely right if their view of marriage they have been indoctrinated into believing is correct.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Because they've been indoctrinated from Sesame Street on. And actually in my book Why We're Catholic.
Your own books. You're trying to keep your books straight now.
Right. Which one are you again? It's like when you have a bunch of kids. Like, yeah. Oh, you're one of our kids. Oh, you're one of my books. I cite a Sesame Street skit where people, they talk about what marriage is. And marriage is just a union of adults so they can live together and be happy. And if that is what marriage is, you're totally right. The church is completely unfair.
Uh-huh.
But the problem
is not what marriage is.
But that's the thing. So you're right. And that's why it's not helpful when we have discussions about so-called same-sex marriage, that we're operating from the incorrect understanding of what marriage is. If marriage is just a way to unite adults so they can find happiness and fulfillment with one another, then same-sex marriage follows. No-fault divorce follows. Yeah. Contraception of any kind follows. Polygamy follows. Anything follows to make you happy.
Yeah, as long as it makes you happy.
Yeah,
right?
But marriage is not here for you to find personal fulfillment. Marriage exists so that the sexual act, the marital act that exists between men and women, takes place within an appropriate confines of a lifelong relationship that society recognizes. And almost every culture on earth has recognized that. But the reason it's so funny we've seen the changes now is because 40 years ago, we had no-fault divorce. But even 300 years ago, you had John Milton, the author of Paradise Lost, write a tract called On the Doctrines and Disciplines of Divorce in England, saying that you should change the laws on divorce because marriage exists so that man will not be lonely. Yeah. So you have somebody you can chat with when you come home from the day. That was essentially his argument. And so if you don't enjoy the person you're with...
That's a very English argument. I need someone to chat with. Who are you going to have tea time
who
with?
Who am I supposed to have Earl Grey tea with? Yes. Hot Earl Grey. By myself? On the holodeck? Impossible.
But he's wrong. That's not marriage.
No, that's not what it's for. Right. So that's one of the... That's one of it.
Let's go to Joe in Portland, Oregon, watching on YouTube Live. Joe, why don't you accept Catholic morality?
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
We can, Joe.
Excellent. So thank you for taking my call. So the reason I reject Catholic morality is because I reject the church's supposed authority to dictate that morality.
Okay.
I believe that from what I know, and I am an ex-Catholic myself, the church bases its authority to teach definitively on the subject of morality and faith and the belief in divine revelation, both of which I reject. And because I reject the faith and supernatural revelation aspect of it, I don't believe that the church actually has authority to teach definitively on the subject of morality.
Okay. Well, there's two different ways we could address this. First, the church also teaches that many aspects of Catholic morality cohere with our human nature, and that we can know from principles of natural law thinking that if you just understand that human beings have a particular purpose or function, and we can look at our human natures and understand how we ought to treat one another, we can deduce many basic principles of Catholic morality, even from a natural law perspective, both scholastic, like St. Thomas Aquinas, and newer proponents of natural law, people like Robert George, Patrick Lee, Sharif Gurgis, I mentioned earlier, John Finnis would be a and Jermaine Grisé are the big examples of that. So that's one route. We can say, you know, if there are certain teachings you disagree with, some of them we can actually talk about with just principles of reason. The other thing, of course, is, well, you and I could have a discussion about why you think the Catholic Church does not have divine authority. Do you think, as you said, you reject divine revelation as a whole. It sounds like you're not really religious at all. Is that correct?
No, I wouldn't say that I am.
Okay. All right. Do you identify as more like an atheist or an agnostic or?
Yeah. I mean, you can pick your term between the two, I guess. Different people argue that they mean different things, and I don't really have a preference as to what you would call me. But yeah, I'm not religious.
All righty. Well, I don't know if we can continue going down the trail here, but I don't want to eat up our – are we close to –
Oh, I was going to give you a few minutes, but I'm kind of enjoying hearing the two of you to talk.
Let's go with that right now. So it sounds like you're making a claim here. Why do you think the church does not have divine authority, or that you don't think there's anything supernatural out there? And if your response could be, well, I haven't seen good evidence for it. I mean, I don't want to jump ahead of your answer. Why do you think that the church, there is no kind of divine revelation out there?
Well, so I think that you jumping ahead of my answer, frankly, was fairly spot on in the sense that, you know, if I haven't seen enough evidence of divine revelation and certainly of the Catholic Church possessing divine revelation, okay, I don't really have any reason to trust, what's coming from.
Sure. I thought you might say that. I've heard it before, certainly. So what I like to ask people is when they say that is, all right, well, what's the best evidence that God has revealed himself in some way to humanity? What's the best evidence you've seen of that? Like, okay, that's the best claim they've got, but here's why I don't buy it. Like, could you give me an example?
So what do I think basically is the best argument for God revealing himself?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking me?
Sure. And why you're not sold?
I don't know what the best. I guess I would argue that miracles or supernatural events.
Sure.
I would, you know, if something that happens that is supernatural, I would argue that that demonstrates that the supernatural does exist. So,
well, let me ask you a question. I like to ask this to atheists sometimes. So, would you agree there have been thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of miracle claims at least?
Yeah, probably. I'm not exactly sure on the number, but
sure,
there have been a whole lot. That's
well,
for sure.
Well, what do you think's more likely? They're all false, or at least one is true?
I honestly don't think there's any way to establish a likelihood on that sort of thing, because they definitely all could be false.
Sure.
And even if one or some were true, I would have literally no way of knowing which ones were or weren't.
Mm-hmm. But you're open to it. But to me, I put it out there as just part of, you know, human datum, that it seems like lots and lots of people have had experiences of the divine in some way, shape, or form. And it seemed to me to simply write off all of them, say, it's more likely that they're all false. That it seemed like someone starting with the presupposition of naturalism or atheism. But I think the more that what we could talk about is, I appreciate your openness to things like miracles. So, do we have any other? Well, you're here with us. You can stick with us for a little bit here. We could talk about a particular miracle. Because for me, the reason I think that the church has divine authority to teach on morality is because the church was founded by Jesus Christ. And I think Jesus has authority because he walked out of his own tomb. And any guy who can walk out of his own tomb, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to listen to what he has to say. And I think there's good evidence for that, that explains a lot of the facts related to the death of Jesus and the beginning of the Christian church, that Jesus' resurrection from the dead explains that very well. So to me, that's a miracle that I think makes the biggest impact. And we can always talk a little bit about that maybe when we come back.
Can you hang on just through one break, Joe?
Sure, absolutely.
Trent Horn is our guest. Joe's on the line from Portland, Oregon. We're discussing, the question of the day is, why do you reject Catholic morality? What is it about Catholic morality you reject? Joe says because He doesn't recognize the Catholic Church's authority to teach based in Revelation. We will get to that when we come back. I want to remind you, though, that we still have that free book for you, Cleansing Fire, Purgatory and Scripture, History and the Church. You just go to the Catholic Answers Facebook page right now and download your free copy of Cleansing Fire, Purgatory in Scripture, History and the Church.
Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
The only thing new about the heresies in the church and the schisms in the church today is it's mixed with satanic worship. We in the church have gone from enneagrams to centering prayer to solstice worship to goddesses. And you buy it as something new.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Catholic Answers Live is proudly supported by CatholicChemistry.com, a new dating site for Catholics who want to do dating right and believe relationships start with Catholic chemistry. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicChemistry.com for their generous support. On the web at CatholicChemistry.com. Catholics teach that you cannot directly attack innocent people in wartime. The Catholic Church teaches against torture. The Catholic Church teaches against divorce and remarriage. The Catholic Church teaches against abortion and euthanasia and suicide. And yeah, I'm listing them for you because maybe there's something in there that you think, no, that is not right, that the Catholic Church would teach that. Maybe you'd like to defend a position that the Catholic Church would deny. You're welcome to call. Why do you reject Catholic morality? Our topic today, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I'll just add, lots and lots of Catholic moral teaching has to do with what you can, can't, should, and shouldn't do with your money or in order to get money. There are Catholic teachings against love of money, Catholic teachings against preferring your money to the welfare of your neighbors. If those bother you, give us a call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We're talking, with Trent Horn. He's here for with us both hours, but we're talking to Joe in Portland. And Joe, you still with us?
Yep, still on the line.
All right.
Well, good. Joe, I do apologize. I'm going to shift us a little bit because I don't want the show to go off its course for its topic. However, I do want to send you a copy of my book, Why We're Catholic. So just stay on the line if, in case we go to another caller. Our call screen will get your information,
okay,
and I will send you Why We're Catholic. My book has a chapter on why we believe in the resurrection. You can read that, and then you can always call back when we have a show on I do a show sometimes called Why Are You Not Religious? And your questions and where we were going is grade A material for the Why Aren't You Religious show. But I really wanted to spend these 2 hours talking about Catholic morality. So I didn't want to get I'm worried if we go about the resurrection, we will go off the tracks where I wanted to go with the show. But here's what I thought we could do.
Maybe
we could talk about a Catholic moral teaching you disagree with and see if there are any principles from reason to make it seem more reasonable to you that don't rely on divine revelation.
Sure. Yeah, we could do that.
All right. Is there one that sticks out to you, one that you disagree with, I guess?
Well, I guess I'll go with an easy target would be the Catholic opposition to same-sex homosexual, I guess, activity, as you would call it, same-sex marriage.
Well, those are two separate things. So one would be the question of sexual behavior between people of the same sex, and then the question of whether marriage should include a man and woman or two men or two women. So would you prefer the question about the sexual act itself or what marriage is?
Well, I suppose about the sexual act itself.
Okay, sure. So, what are your thoughts? I would assume you don't think there's anything morally problematic with that.
No, I don't think there's any way to establish that there is something morally problematic with that. No.
Okay. What is the standard you use to determine if a sexual behavior is moral, is moral and not immoral or disordered?
So I would probably say that, you know, I guess give the classic atheist answer. If it's harmful to somebody else, or if it's harmful to society at large, I would argue that though that would make it immoral.
Okay, how do you determine if sexual activity is harmful or not?
Well, I guess you need to look at the effects of said activity. So, you know, we can show a lot of examples to prove that something like rape, for example, is very harmful to people and can be harmful not only to people, but also to society at large. And as a result, we can definitely say, I think, that rape is immoral, at least if we're using, you know, the welfare of society and mankind as our basis. And similarly with a consensual, you know, homosexual activity, mm-hmm. I do not think that there is any harm that is done that would make it immoral.
Okay, because I guess there's two different ways one could respond to that. So the definition of harm then might be one that we would talk about, because I think medical studies are very clear, for example, that sexual relations between two men make one far, far more likely to contract various sexual diseases and various kinds of cancers, for example. Now, I think, for example, when you look at things, not to be graphic, but we're getting there, things like anal cancer, much, much higher. Now, the retort may be, even if that were the case, that it's a quote-unquote risky behavior, as long as it's consenting, as long as people are consenting, that might be the main issue here. So I guess for you, what's the relation between harm and consent? Because could two people engage in a consensual activity, even if it causes pain or injury or harm, and that's okay?
I would say in general, yes. Okay. I think it's, you know, why we allow people to smoke and drink in society.
Okay. So sexual activity is related to, so it deals with consent then. See, for me, yeah. I would ask, like, well, then why is consent the big deal? To me, if you and I are having a discussion about this, I would take the question back a step in order to determine whether sexual behavior is ordered or disordered. So I might ask you the question, what is sex for?
I don't know that sex, I think sex can be for a variety of different things depending on the situation. I think especially if you look at the animal kingdom, it's in the same way. I mean, the most basic answer would be obviously the procreation of the species. Mm-hmm. But there are other reasons that sex is used in the animal kingdom. And I think there are other reasons that it could even be used within human society that we're not for.
So you're saying it's primarily for procreation, but it could be for a whole host of other things. So there's not a main thing it's for. So for me, then I would say that doesn't accord with some big intuitions that we have about sex. And it's hard to find, because, okay, here's one we could try. What is a sexual give an example of a sexual disorder besides rape. Like, that's a disorder. You should not engage that sexual behavior besides rape. And I would say, human relations with animals would be an easy example. Would you be able to come up with an answer to that? A sexual disorder, disordered sexual behavior that's not rape, I guess.
That's a good question. I might have to give it more thought to come up with a definite.
Sure. Well, let's answer. Unfortunately, and we will let's just give your email. We'll send you that info. We're at the end of our hour. It was great talking to you. But for me, when sex is just about consent, there, you know, all other disorders kind of creep in, and we lose what its ultimate end is for, which is for a marital end. And there's a lot more we could talk about that, but it was nice to chat with you about the subject.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks very much for the call. Why do you reject Catholic morality is our topic, and we will continue with that topic next hour. So if you're on the line, please stay on the line. And if you haven't dialed yet, 888-318-7884 is the number. Trent Horn, our guest. next hour coming up as well. 888-318-7884.